Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. I'm your host, Becky Davidson, and we are so glad that you are joining us for this week's episode. You know, it is our heart with this podcast to bring you stories of inspiration and hope as we highlight different families from around the world who are raising children with special needs. And today is no different. Our story today is amazing. I had the opportunity to sit down with my friends, LJ and Jessica Coates, as they tell their story of being parents to a child with profound special needs. I got to meet Jessica several years ago when she and one of her best friends came to our By the Brook retreat, and she came in the door, and I remember seeing her walk in with her friend, and we struck up a conversation right away and became fast friends and have stayed in touch over all these years. She and her husband, LJ, were also gracious enough to share their story in my late husband's book, Common Man, Extraordinary Call, and you can find it there in that book as well. And Jessica also spoke at one of our By the Brook retreats several years ago when we did, our theme was Love Well, and she and her friend Letitia shared their story of friendship, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful story. And so you can find that at our downloads where we have our downloadable retreat experiences. So I know that you are going to love hearing from LJ and Jessica as they share part of their journey of raising their child with profound special needs and also their life with their 16-year-old daughter as well. In fact, our conversation went so well and there were so many things that we had to talk about that I will be bringing them back for another episode because there's just so much more to their story. So we'll call this part one with LJ and Jessica Coates, and stay tuned because they'll be back for more episodes soon. So enjoy this conversation that I had with my friends LJ and Jessica. LJ and Jessica, goodness, I'm so glad to actually, I get to see you through the screen on the computer, but I've missed you guys so much, and I'm so glad to get to see you. And I am so grateful for you giving up some time to share your story with our listeners on the podcast, because let me tell you, your story is one of my most favorite. I mean, there's certain things about your story that are some of the most impactful things, seriously, that, and I'll get to that later, but okay. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad that you're here with us. And just, I was thinking back, Jessica, to when we first met, and I'm trying to think because it had to have been about, what, 12 years ago, probably?
Yeah, I think so. Zion is 14. It may have been 11 years ago. I think okay. He was three.
Okay. Well, you came to probably the second By the Brook that we ever hosted. Oh, and yeah. Came in with Letitia, and I remember seeing these two beautiful women walk in the door, and you and I started talking, and I mean, I just fell in love with you from that moment, and it was like, then you became part of the Rising Above family.
Yes, I did.
From that moment, and led a group when you were living in Birmingham, and just so many things, and so we're going to share some of that as we have this conversation, but I'm so glad you and LJ are joining us. And so, guys, tell us just a little bit about your family and what your day-to-day life looks like as special needs parents.
Oh, wow. I will start out. Well, first of all, we've been married close to 17 years. We have two beautiful children. We have our special needs baby, Zion, who is 14. And we have our big girl, Nadia Elizabeth, who is a 16-year-old now, and driving.
She is beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Beautiful. Yeah.
And we both come from fairly big families, very supportive families, originally from Birmingham, Alabama, now living and residing in Columbia, Maryland. Big change. We've been here for about 2 years. I am into executive management for a trade association here in Maryland, and my husband is RN, but he works in the intensive care unit of a local hospital here. And our day to day, and you can chime in at any time, but our day to day is I say is structured, but it's kind of crazy So we definitely operate as a team. We have a wonderful, and I know we're privileged, we have a wonderful private duty nurse for daytime. And we also have a nurse that comes in at night. So we have a lot of support, not as much family support because we're in a new state and we're building our network and our support team here every day. But our day-to-day, we make it work. It's a team effort. Everybody plays a role. Everybody is respected, but everybody is hands-on. Zion is our baby. He's 16, but he's our, I mean, he's 14, but he's our baby every day.
Wow.
And to expound on that, you know, when we moved, we, you know, God has a way of sending the right caregivers into Zion's life. And he gave us a wonderful woman named Miss, call her Miss Jackie affectionately. And when we got here, it took us literally over a year to get services restarted. That's one thing we didn't think about once we moved. So literally Zion didn't have a caregiver for the first year. So I had to work nights again. So that kind of changed our family dynamic. So I was having to work night shift to be here during the day with him.
Yeah.
While our daughter went to school and things of that nature. So, but we have been blessed to get a wonderful nurse. Like I said, God knows how to pick. She just is loving and caring. Yeah, she's awesome. Her name is Mrs. Ola. And just to kind of expound on our day to day, it really helped us. It really helped us, like, with our family dynamic to get the right caregivers.
Absolutely.
It is an issue going through so many. The fact that we found one so quick was awesome here.
Yeah, so glad.
We are lucky.
Yeah. So now to share a little bit about Zion, because I know that he has a rare genetic disorder. Is that correct? And share a little bit about what that looks like for him and what that is.
Okay. I'll let you start.
Okay. Zion has a rare genetic disorder called infantile neuroaxonal dystrophy. It's called INADS for short. Very long name for a very short and ugly disease. It's iron accumulation in the brain, which destroys his pathways. Any learned traits that he learned up until maybe 18 months, he still had them, but he just couldn't access. Things like reaching for something, he still has it, but because the pathways are destroyed, almost like an extension cord. It's just like, it's like ripping the outside of the extension cord off. So it's kind of frayed. So the electrical currents are not going back and forth to be able to access learned skills. And with that, he is basically like a 14-year-old infant. With that, he is totally dependent on us. He no head movement, anything. He's totally dependent on us. So with that, his day-to-day, like I tell everybody, I said, you don't know living until the hardest thing you got to do every day is just take breaths. And that's his main function, is just to keep breathing and take breaths. We have... You know, unfortunately, saw him and have witnessed him decline over the years. You know, he used to smile, laugh, cool, do things of that nature because he was totally healthy when he was born. So to let your listeners know and viewers know that this disease, it wasn't something that like other diseases or issues.
The onset is usually earlier.
Right. When you kind of know in birth, like, okay, I see the problem. Our son was crawling and
he met all of his milestones under so he lifted at the right time, he crawled at the right time, he had voluntary movement at the right time. My pregnancy was amazing.
He was feeding himself, like we'll put food in, he'll
all the regular things under 2 years old that your toddler milestones will make, he made. So in a sense, this disease robbed us, but I'm still grateful that I had those experiences. Thank goodness this man took pictures like crazy. He had some cool equipment back then, because if it wasn't for those pictures, the stress level of being in denial, knowing you're seeing red flags, but not, you know, admitting to it, and then going through the cycle of figuring out what is wrong with your child, it caused our memories to be more of a blur. So without the pictures, and I feel you, I know you, some of your listeners are probably living that, going through that, and God bless your other children, your siblings, because in a way, if it wasn't for the pictures and our support, I was just trying to survive.
To see him regress
It was
To see him regress, to see your son going the way your daughter did, because she, you know, she came first.
And right.
She progressed. And he was progressing also. And he went from almost walking mm-hmm. and talking to going back to crawling to scooting. And to see that over a period of 2 years, you know, it was heartbreaking because your husband alluded to it years ago. It's like, man, we are fixers.
Yeah.
When we get in a situation that is out of our hands and we can't fix anything, we just mm-hmm. feel helpless and hopeless and worthless because we want to be able to fix it. And this was something that I myself as a man could not fix. My wife could not fix.
Yeah.
That's his disease in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Affects the brain, the nervous right. system, and his overall skeletal structure. And so his main issues are respiratory issues.
Wow. And that's got to be scary right now.
Scary.
In light of COVID. I mean, that has got to put just an extra weight of stress on you guys in this season that we're in right now.
Absolutely.
Yes, and he's had two procedures. Like, he had to get his GJ tube, I don't know.
Replaced.
Like, yeah, replaced twice within 3 weeks because the first one he got replaced was not functioning as soon as it was replaced. So he had to go to John Hopkins twice in like a month. And
during this pandemic.
Right, And he had to get two COVID tests. So we basically had to pull up, get him swabbed. And even with his new caregivers coming in, they started around COVID. It was very nerve-wracking because I literally took off of work and didn't go to work for a couple of months because we were so concerned about bringing him anything from the hospital.
Absolutely.
And I would work with that population that is in contact with COVID. So it was a very touch and go situation. And for us to actually break down and say, okay, we waited over a year
and a half
to get services. And now that they're offering to us in March of this year, in the beginning of the pandemic, we had to make a decision.
It was very scary.
Yeah.
So we pivoted, you know, we basically made a decision that we're going to hold off, you know, because initially, you know, it was just scary. I think it affected everybody. We didn't know about this COVID-19. Never thought in a million years you would be navigating in a space of a global pandemic. And we didn't want to pass over our services. But like he said, we had to make the adjustments. But we actually started his private duty nursing through the waiver here at the state of Maryland in June.
Okay. Wow.
So it was new territory, but it's worked out so far so
That's
good.
So good. He's now part
this and he's negative. Yay.
Good. Yes. That's wonderful. Now part of his diagnosis is that they told you early on his life expectancy would be shortened because of this. That's what they said though, right? That's not what happened.
Oh, no, we have a whole different story. So picture this, you know, here we are. Zion is 14 years old, but during his diagnosis, he was almost three, not quite three. And we're two young parents sitting at the University of Alabama in the genetics department. And they're having to convey this awful news. And I totally respect their approach and the strategy because they wanted to be raw, transparent, and hand over all of the information that they had. It was very limited at that time, but we were told his life expectancy. They gave us a range, but I'll never forget, it was 5 to 10 years old. And that was probably the biggest blow I had ever experienced. And I think I was right at 30, 31 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, thinking you have life figured out and, you know, life brings you all types of obstacles and changes. And we had to take that diagnosis, empower ourselves because we had basically been tortured. It was torture not knowing what your child was dealing with mm-hmm. as you saw them go from making a milestone and then going backwards, as my husband described. So that diagnosis may have been one of the saddest days, but it also empowered us.
And to add a little context to that, before that, Zion went to the Mayo Clinic
in Minnesota mm-hmm.
and was misdiagnosed. And we were, you know, in the beginning, extremely happy because it was something that we could find online and something that they said was possibly treatable. And we were so excited. And when that misdiagnosis turned into what his actual disease process was, or his genetic disorder was, it went from, okay, we have all this literature online, to I could barely find two paragraphs on the whole worldwide
wow.
about my son's disease.
Very rare.
It was just that rare that, you know, it was like a sobering effect on our family, because, like I said, I want to fix things or figure out or research it until I can put him in the best of whatever to get him fixed. You know, I want to fix him.
Right.
Be my son and better than to sit in that conference room with this neurologist / geneticist. And she, you know, don't get me wrong, she cried with us because she felt for
literally
us.
Cried with us.
Yeah. But she had to break it down and tell us that, you know, I'm sorry, that, but, you know, the disease or the genetic disorder won't take him out of this world, but the respiratory issues will.
Wow.
And she, you know, she cried and said he may live, like you said,
five to 10 years.
And that was...
That was a hard, I mean, unbelievable thing to hear. Yeah.
Hard and dark space. Yeah. But, you know, thinking about that, you know, we can dive into so much. So whatever you want to talk about, because what is on my mind and heart is that grief period. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to identify it, but it's a true thing when you receive news like that, and whether you pivot, it strengthens you, and you go for, you know, head on. It begins a grief process of the life you thought should have, the life your child deserved. Mm-hmm. And that's a grueling process.
Yes.
It's very stressful on individuals. It breaks you down spiritually, physically. It harms or strengthens your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we, as two individuals together as one, we deal with our grief differently.
Yes.
And I applaud, you know, Rising Above, because I crossed paths with your ministry years ago at the very right time. We were going through a lot, and your ministry spoke to me. I was a stranger. I did not have a connection in Rising Above. I did not know my Becky and Jeff. But I'm so thankful that I was open to stepping into something to get help, get the resources and the spiritual nurturing that I needed. And, you know, the rest is history. But it was that pivotal time. It was shortly afterwards that I crossed paths with you guys.
Yes.
And stepped out on faith and came to Tennessee not knowing a soul.
And I love that story. There's so many parts of this that, I mean, we could talk for days, I think, because there's so many pieces. Because part of that story is that sweet Letitia came with you to that retreat after she had just lost her child.
Less than a year. In the first year of her transition of losing her special needs son.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, that was, in fact, then you guys came and shared at our retreat talking about love well, because what a better example of loving well than her willingness to do that. You were in such a desperate spot right there, just getting your diagnosis, trying to figure out what this looks like. And she had just walked through something similar and just such a beautiful, beautiful story. You know, I spent a little time today. I won't call it Facebook stalking because we're friends on Facebook. but I visited your page, Jessica. And, okay, my goodness, you're like this crazy executive woman who was doing all these things. LJ, you being an intensive care nurse, I have such a special place in my... I'm going to try to say this without crying. Mm-hmm. But... intensive care nurses, my goodness, all the times, all the times that Jeff was sick in intensive care, those nurses, they were the most kind, the most compassionate people who walked through the most challenging times of our life. And so, man, I applaud you. I applaud you both. And I just, my heart for what you do is just so big. And I look out, you know, I'm scrolling through all you do, and I'm going, How in the world do you do this? You've got all these things going on with Nadia, 16-year-old beautiful. Okay, LJ, you've got a beautiful daughter on your hands. What are you going to do about these? She's going to have boys knocking on the door. I want to know how you're going to handle this, you know.
Awesome segue into the fact that she's about to have her first date today.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, in about 4 hours.
And distancing date.
Yeah, and I said, okay, number one, I need to meet him. And number two, she's come into my room 3 times already and changed clothes. Like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? I was like, just be comfortable and be yourself. And I was like, do you normally wear that? She's like, no. I said, well, don't wear it. So I'm trying to be, what's the right word? I'm trying
supportive
of her dating, but at the same time, I'm still dad.
Yeah, of course.
And I remember me as a young man. So, no disrespect, but teenagers are just teenagers. So, only thing I could do is scare enough to, tell her, hey, COVID is out there. So not be kissing or anything like that. You shouldn't even be 6 feet. Near him.
Keep your social distance dating.
I'm actually kind of okay with her dating, knowing that she's scared. She's very
cautious. Yeah.
Yeah. She's such a germaphobe that she wants to go on a date, but in this climate, I think they'll keep their distance. So I think
it's not a real date. We stay in a walkable district. They're walking across to the restaurant across the street.
There you go.
But I think it's a happy medium. Wanted to date.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so how do you guys, you've got LJ, you are working in a hospital, intensive care nurse. Jessica, you're an executive.
Yeah.
You've got you've got caregivers for Zion, but you've got to manage that. That's part of it. We have these people coming into our homes, but we still have to manage all of that.
Yeah.
So how in the world do you do that? Are there certain tips, certain things that you guys have put in place in your family life that make it manageable for you guys?
I will start off to say, number one, anybody that's in a situation that's going to get caregivers, whether they're private duty or through an agency or through Medicaid or Medicare, if you're not comfortable, you can speak up. If it's not a good fit, pretend like you're in a restaurant and you have a rude waiter or less than stellar or less than ideal waiter just not on their job. Speak up and ask for another one, until you find that right fit, because it's your child.
Absolutely.
This is somebody that you may have to leave along with your child for extended periods of time. So until you feel comfortable with this caregiver, speak up. Like, no, this is not it. My wife, and especially my wife, we have fired several. And we had to come to the grips. Like, they said, well, yeah, we have a nurse, whatever. Like, no, tell her not to come back. Yeah. It's not disrespect to the nurse, but it's like, it's not a good fit.
Sometimes it's not a good fit. Exactly.
On the piggyback on that, I think what he's saying is key. But the communication amongst our team, we're family. Yes, we're husband and wife. Yes, we have a beautiful, helpful, hands-on 16-year-old. But we literally operate as a team. Mm. The team is up some days, the team is down, but every day we are a team. We all play a part. We are very respectful of each other's time, exhaustion, and our energy levels. Mm. We have each other's back. We have to cover. We may not have the most traditional family roles like other families. We make it for ourselves, and we're not ashamed. We don't hold guilt. A lot of times he's the cook. Some months I'm more of the cook. We're teaching and pouring into our daughter to be more self-sufficient so she can be successful in college. But most importantly, we communicate and we are a team that support each other on a daily basis, especially moving our family to another state and leaving behind
our support system,
which you really never realize how amazing your support system is until you leave them.
Yeah.
And you don't have them.
Yeah.
And to continually piggyback on that, you have to understand that Zion's disease pretty much made our daughter, not to say this in a hurtful way, but it pretty much made her only child. In a sense where she doesn't have her brother to go back and forth with
or
interact with. She basically she became another primary caregiver.
Right.
She had to change diapers and learn about his GJ tube. She's actually called out some of his caregivers like, that's not right. You're doing
Right.
So she's very astute when it comes to him. But at the same time, she has a big void in her life for another sibling that she missed, because they would have literally been a year and a half apart.
Right.
Close in age.
So I have a sister that basically has children that are basically a year and a half apart, and they have each other. And she sees that dynamic, and sometimes, right, like, y'all need to have another kid because I'm missing out. But she's now maybe a year and a half away from going to college.
Going to college, yeah. So a little late for that, right?
Yeah. In all honesty, that's another dynamic. And like my wife said, because I work nights, sometimes I'll stay up on purpose because the way the caregivers are set up, one comes at 10 and leaves at 6 in the morning. It's not ideal for our family, but right, be up to let them out the house. And then we have to cover for 3 hours until the next nurse comes.
Oh, yeah. So you have to make it work.
You just.
But
you do. And that's the beautiful thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like so many times it's so easy to just let those things cause arguments, cause fights, cause issues in your relationship. But, you know, you guys are saying we're a team. And I love that. You know, we're a team. We're going to figure out. Everybody's going to find their role, play their part. It's going to look different than other people's lives, because you're a special needs family. Our lives look different anyway. But you moved, and one of the things you talked about was your family. And I know you guys are super close to your family. And this is one of my favorite stories from you guys. This honestly has been something I have shared over and over and over again. It is in Jeff's book, my late husband's book, Common Man Extraordinary Call, because when we were finishing up Jeff's book and we were looking at different things about how we deal with people, it's in the book, it's called dealing with civilians and people outside the special needs world, and trying to get people who don't live in our world to understand and come alongside us. And I remember, I think it was, guys, at our marriage conference.
Yeah, yeah.
That you shared this story. And honestly, I cannot tell you how many times I have shared this, because it's just like yes, this is exactly what you need to do. And so I want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
And so you guys, you have an amazing supportive family. Mm-hmm. However, when Zion had been in the hospital, it was feeling a little bit less than support. So I want you to tell the story. Because yeah. I think it's so impactful, and it's such a great lesson for us as special needs parents and for our family.
Absolutely, and forgive me if I'm not getting the dates and everything right, because we have shared this story, and I'm honored that it's in the book. It blew me away when you asked, so thank you for that. But I don't remember how old he was, but it was one long stint in the hospital, and I know all of the special need parents out there, we know that life. And I know that Zion was suffering with pneumonia. So we were in there the standard, maybe 3 to 5 days. And we were literally in the hospital, just attending to one another as we attend to Zion and his care. And I felt lonely.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great relationship where we can talk about how we're feeling. At that point, we did. And I said, I just conveyed how I felt, and then I said, it's sad. I feel like we haven't shared enough with our family. We're existing. We have our smiles on our faces. We're going to church. We go to family functions, but it's like we never really allowed anyone in. And I don't think I had ever really been conscious of it until I questioned, why do I feel lonely in this hospital? And I have parents that are living, my husband's family is there for us. Everyone that surrounds us, and they're our biggest cheerleader for everything else. But when it came to Zion, I think we were operating in a bubble of fear, a bubble of safety and comfort, and just navigating, because we felt like this was our little world. This is our child.
Right.
We're the caregivers. And on the surface, we're just doing well.
Yeah, we're figuring how to, you know, we're basically insulated, figuring this out day by day, figuring out how to deal, going through the stages of grieving every day with what's in front of us.
Right.
And not realizing that people on the outside looking in, you know, basically our family, they were hesitant and, you know, very
walking on
eggshells around us. But it's kind of like two layers. Like, it's us trying to be there for each other and for him. And at the same time, people were coming by the hospital, but yet and still we didn't realize that they were so nervous around him, so scared.
Yeah.
And wanting to do more, but we had a wall up. Mm. So in a nutshell, I made a suggestion, or maybe it was LJ, because we were participating in regular family dinners, like a lot of families. And I said, why not, or he said, why not let's talk about it at our next family dinner, because it was our time to host. Mm-hmm. And this may have been a month out. So we got released. We planned it. Like, we were always going to plan it because it was our time to host. And we kind of rehearsed something the night before, but we basically made a decision that we wanted to open the floor to discuss Zion. We wanted to have a Q&A. It was simple things that we take for granted that we think people understand or people know about, but we really had not let anyone in. Mm. To be such a close, tight-knit family, we talk about everything else from football to food to entertainment, but when it came to their grandchild, their nephew, their cousin, we put up a wall of safety and just smiled like everything was fine. Right. So at that particular Sunday dinner, we had food, everybody was having a good time, we stood up. We said we would like to, you know, have a conversation, make a few announcements. We thank you for your prayers and support. But we want to talk about the elephant in the room. I remember saying that. The elephant.
I know. I've got it. I remember you telling it that way.
And everybody was like,
uh-oh, where's she going?
What they were thinking. Yeah. and he started it off. And he went straight into Zion's disease and just the journey. And I think I posed a question to, like, loosen people up because everybody was, like, on the edge.
Right.
I said, who knows Zion's diagnosis? And the only person that attempted, I think, was my mom.
Yeah.
And she didn't even get it right.
Yeah.
And that hurt my heart because I feel like that's part of our responsibility. That just was proof that we were not really communicating. We were just surviving and operating and leaving out the people who loved us so hard. And when the floor was open and people felt more comfortable as we were talking, we found out that so many of them walk and move in hesitation around us. Mm. They walked and moved in fear of hurting our feelings. They walked and moved lightly because they didn't know the temperature of the room half of the time.
Yeah.
And it just kind of like, we all broke down. The barriers came down. Even my brother, I only have one sibling, and he shared his heart. He talked about how he's been battling with his relationship with God because he felt like we had been punished. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just ripped me apart, but I had no idea.
Yeah,
I didn't create the space for them to feel comfortable. It's like we were holding Zion away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had, you know, family members that said they were willing to take care of him, but they didn't know how. And, you know.
We never asked anyone for help.
Right.
That was another thing. Yeah. I don't know why we didn't. We just.
Well, you were surviving too, you know, given you were reeling with the diagnosis, dealing with being in and out of the hospital and all of that. Mm-hmm. I love that you came to that realization. You know, I just feel like that's just God going, okay, guys, just. I got your back here.
Sent help. I just didn't recognize it.
You just couldn't see it, mm-hmm. you know? And then to have the boldness to just lay it out there. People are afraid. They're going to offend us. They're going to say the wrong thing. Yeah. They're going to say something that's going to hurt us. We put up these walls and barriers because we want to protect our family. We want to protect our child. And yet, there are people in our life that do want to be a part of our story.
They don't know how.
But they don't know how.
Yeah.
And so I love that story because that's so easy for people to do. I mean, like, what I'm saying is to at least open up the floor.
Yeah.
Open up the dialogue, open up the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it should come from the parents more so than an outside entity, whether it be family or friends, because when you're on the outside, you don't know what's appropriate or inappropriate to ask or not ask. So once we kind of allowed them or told them, okay, this is a diagnosis, this is a life expectancy, this is how we take care of him, they were way more open to asking questions they've always wanted mm-hmm. to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Once they asked those questions, we were able to answer it, and it was just so shocking the how small the questions they were asked or want to know, the information they want to know, and it was so simple, but they were scared to ask simple questions. And once we got past that barrier, it opened up. Like one of her aunties started taking care of him on a regular basis, allowing us time to go on dates.
Yeah. Wow. She got trained.
Yeah,
we trained.
Yeah, we trained family members, and don't get me wrong. To this day,
we only have a
handful of people talking about moving up here. That it's a big production if we want to go on vacation, because we literally have to fly somebody from Alabama here.
Right.
And then we have to fly from here to somewhere else. So it's a big production to make sure everybody's available. But the fact that that day we got the whole family involved, that we got more support than we would have had if we would have kept it status quo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I want to add one thing. When I think about that story, because I've shared it in different circles, I have to say this. The end result is not we got a million caregivers, because that's not what right. everybody is not meant to
exactly.
take care of your special needs child.
Exactly.
However, I have learned to recognize the support where people are.
Mm.
Without even naming names, we have one of our support family members. It's just a phone call. They yeah. like to call
love
and ask about Zion. And I'm open to the call because that's how they show their support.
Love it. Yeah.
One family member wants to understand the in and out of workings of all his equipment. Not that they want to do anything with it, but they want to know what's going on. And it's so amazing because everybody brings different things to the table. Everybody's not meant to be a babysitter and a caregiver.
Yeah, one-on-one caregiver.
No,
but does
not
it? Yeah. But when that person asks even about the equipment, then that mm-hmm. just, doesn't that just as your parents' heart just go, oh my goodness, they care enough to
yes.
want to know what this is and how this works. And it's mm-hmm. beautiful. Beautiful.
Exactly. We had to open up and be understanding and knowledgeable that it was time to take that next step, to embrace
yeah.
who God gave us to
yeah.
support us in life.
Yes.
And the reality is there may be some families here go like, okay, we're going to try this. And you might not get the kind of response that you guys did. You know, that's
yeah.
that's the risk that we take putting ourselves out there like that. And I'm so grateful.
The information is there. The knowledge is power.
Exactly.
Once they have the information, they can do it as they please. But now they know and they can act accordingly, and any apprehension that was there beforehand can be removed, and they can ask that piercing question they've always wanted to ask. Or if they just want to be nosy and say, well, can I take care of, people may want to help take care of your child, but are afraid to ask. But if you open up the floor and open up that dialogue and that back and forth, you'll be shocked at the people that's willing to mm-hmm. to be a support to you.
Yeah.
And like my wife said, like my dad, he's like, no, I'm not, Now me and my wife together, him and his wife now together, they'll tag team and take care of him, but him by himself, but
I'm okay with that.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And better to know that on the front end,
absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. And again, that story can be found in Common Man Extraordinary Call. And I think you shared it too at that same store it by the brook and that Love Well. So I just, it's such a powerful story. And like I said, I've used it over the years, just encouraging families who are having those conflicts yeah. in their families. Now, you guys, you've been special needs parents now for 14 years.
Right.
14 years. How has your life as special needs parents shaped who you are today?
Oh, my goodness. I'll start. I know that I am a better person because of my son's life. The things you take for granted, the sweet, precious, small things you take for granted, I no longer take for granted. it shaped my way in a positive way. I feel like I've grown, I've evolved. I'm still a work in progress. So yeah. I hadn't arrived, but I think my level of understanding, empathy for others, it is just greater, and I've evolved to be a more wholesome person. My patience, I still have to work on that because I'm not the most patient person, but I look at things different.
Yeah.
The world looks different to me. The beauty that exists around us, I recognize it more clear. And like I said, we all have our own little issues and quirks. But Zion has blessed my life. I feel chosen. I really do. I feel like we were chosen. I think it's all within our purpose. So it shaped my life in a beautiful way. And it's changed my life in so many ways. And it's brought so many amazing people in our path. We look at Zion all the time because we're quirky like that. We talk to him.
We even talk
in his voice. I mean, all types of stuff. And we know that Zion has been this light. And he shines so bright across this country. He's bridged so many beautiful relationships. And it's trickled over and sprinkled into my professional life, to our church life, to our friends. I mean, I can go on and on about how being chosen for this journey has blessed my life. I feel more fulfilled.
Love that.
Like you said, I don't think anything happens for, I mean, I think things happen for a reason. And like I said, I went into nursing before my son's diagnosis and had no idea how pivotal that career move would be in his life.
Yes.
And it has blessed me to kind of have a foresight to kind of handle some things that have been coming our way.
Right.
But as far as how he's changed our life, like I said, this little boy has had people pray for him. He's introduced us to, like I said, we wouldn't have met you if it wasn't for him. We wouldn't have met Letitia. People that we call friends and family to this day, because this little boy that can't even speak, his light is shining so bright, so many different areas of our life and others. And basically, you look at him and what he has to go through, and you realize that, like I said, the hardest thing he has to do every day is take a breath and complain about so many minute things in this world. And his only job every day is to breathe.
Wow.
So when I go to work and, you know, I do deal with sick people, but the ones that are going to be okay and are feeling sorry for themselves, I can have a testimony to them. I'm like, listen, you know.
Meet my son.
Yeah, they're like, you know, you're a good nurse. I said, listen, I've been on the other side of that bed. You know, and that kind of puts it in perspective for me in my career, in my life, that I've been on the other side of that bed and have doctors come in and talk to us.
Yes.
Or I've been on the other side of bed and wanting somebody to give proper care to my child. So when I think back to that, I think that he has, you know, brought a perspective in this world that what do we have to complain about? Like,
absolutely.
What, you know, we have breath in our body. We can move and walk and talk, and we can, you know, make wrongs right. We can have a better day the next day if we had a bad day.
Yes.
But with him, he's just going on every day,
pushing through,
just taking those breaths and being a light. And when he did smile, he'd give us a little smile or a little grin or a little cool to everything was okay. And every so often now he does that.
Every blue moon.
But it's just, you know, you have to put things in perspective.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were blessed with Zion, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Me neither.
I love it. I love it. Well, guys, we close each podcast with the one thing. And so, you know, you talked about grieving. You know, you're having to grieve through this. You know, we grieve as special needs parents, just different milestones and things. But when someone, a doctor has come to you and kind of said, this is the life expectancy of your child, it puts a different perspective on your journey. So what's the one thing that you would say to maybe a young parent who has just walked out of that doctor's office where they've given them that grim news, you know, that this is what we think your child's life expectancy is going to be, and they're struggling and their hearts are broken and aching. And what would be something encouraging you would say to them as they are trying to navigate this new normal, this new life, this new diagnosis that they've been given?
Ooh, that is probably one of the darkest places I can imagine a parent being in. And the first thing that came to my mind when you structured the question was, take it one day. And if that's too much, take it hour by hour. I think I felt like I was drowning because I was trying to figure out the next year,
right,
the next stage, the next few years. And it took my breath away, especially when they gave me a parameter of his life expectancy. And I almost had to like compartmentalize it and put it on the shelf to survive. But if you can take it day by day, hour by hour, put your first, your best foot forward, embrace the support you have, even if it's not ideal, and take a breath and do your best. That's really all you can do when it comes to taking in a diagnosis that is not favorable and very sad. That's what came to my heart.
Yeah, I hope.
So good.
I would say this. Understand for everybody that's listening, that's going through this, that stages of grieving, they have them outlined, but understand they're not concrete.
Right. Absolutely.
Everybody goes through it. Denial. Not my son. Not my child. You question God. Why God? You question bargain. You go to the bargaining. Like, God, trade my life for you. You know, just depression and sadness and things of that nature. And then you come, you accept it. And then it starts over.
Oh, my
exactly. And, yes. You know, you're fine for months. And then something happens in a hospitalization or realization that,
something,
oh, my God. Okay, he's seven. They only gave him 10 years to live. And then denial and then bargaining again. So with that, understand that it's going to be a cycle. It's going to be a repetitive cycle. Just make sure, like my wife said, that if you're, you know, if you're married, lean on your spouse. And if you're alone, lean on somebody that you trust and are confident that you confide in, because those stages can take you to some dark places.
Yes.
You know, and if you become a victim of your own thoughts and ideas, that, you know, you can become clinically and chronically depressed, and you can have anxieties, you can have issues that literally are out of your control, no matter how much you worry about them or anything else. And like my dad said, if, you know, you're going to pray while worry, you're going to worry while I pray. So it's easier said than done when you're but I just, for everybody listening, and, you know, especially men, because like I said, we're fixers, he's out your hand. You're going to go through these stages, even women, you're going to go through these stages, but understand that it doesn't last forever. You will come to acceptance. You will come to live in your new normal. But if it does resurface, that's okay.
Exactly. Give yourself the grace.
Give yourself that grace, but let somebody know that you're feeling that way. Don't hold it.
That's an important word there, LJ, about let somebody know. And I think that, as you know, especially as parents, so often we want to act like we've got it all together. We're in control of this situation. We've got it all together. But man, there's sometimes we just need to go to somebody and go, I am struggling. And I think for men, LJ, would you say, you know, as a man, that's a hard thing to do. I think sometimes women are more open to being able to go to another woman and going, okay, I'm struggling with this. But I think for dads, sometimes that's a real struggle.
And I'll share with you a small little story. Right now, one of my close friends, you know, since college, we talk every day, if not every other day. And then just to sum it up, I didn't realize that he was apprehensive about every phone call that we had. So if I called him, he had to basically check for the deflection of my voice to see what kind of conversation we were going to have. And he's like, hey, man, how you doing? So he's like, okay, everything cool. We can go on with our conversation. And if I call him, man, what's going on? His eyes in the heart. It's like he said, he's always waiting for the other shoe to drop. So he pretty much told me, he said, man, I get so nervous every time you call me.
Wow.
He said, because I don't know what that conversation is going to sound like. He said, because I know that Zion's, you know, at that age, because we've had that conversation. So But I didn't know that. And I just found this out like maybe a month ago. And he's like, man, I said, I'm, and this has been my friend for over 20 years. And, yeah. And he's like, he said, I dread your phone call. He said, not to be mean or nothing like that. He said, but I don't know what you're going to say. And then right. I dread you saying that something happened to Zion. Mm. And I did not know that. Wow. So I, you know, so, but that's just one other thing to add on to it. So,
yeah, guys. Okay. So we could talk 4 days.
Yes, we could.
That is what I know. And you will be back as guest on the podcast. I mean,
I love to.
That's going to happen. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that all those years ago, Jessica, you were brave and you were bold and you came to By the Brook all those years ago when you were scared and you didn't know anything about who we were, what we were doing, and you came. And out of that, God introduced us and we have been friends.
Yes.
Over all these years. And I'm so, so grateful. And LJ, just, I'm so glad to get to connect with you again. And I'm just telling you, we are going to be, get ready. Cause and Jessica, we'll be back because I would love to. So many things to talk about. And I'm just so grateful for you guys. And so thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast with us today.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We would like to thank Jimmy Thorpe and Patrick Mayberry for providing the music for our podcast today. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.